We're going to start today with two readings, and in a very unusual pattern for us, but not so unusual for most churches, both of my readings are going to come from the biblical text. So the first reading today comes from 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 through 8. And I'm reading this time from the English Standard Version. Hear now these words. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. And then from 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things.
Maybe we will get to heaven and realize we were both wrong. The sharpest stone, big as this room, is it really a winner if we all have broken bones? We will get to heaven and realize we were both wrong. We're all just slapping wrists over why we all exist. Everyone's Arminian and everyone's a Calvinist.
Message this morning is entitled On God, Gods, and Politics. So somewhat maybe surprisingly, the U.S. Census doesn't ask about religion. There are, however, other groups who have conducted surveys to help us understand religion in the United States. And one of those groups, and one I most frequently reference, is Pew Research Group. According to them, these are our current percentages of population for major religious groups in the U.S. Christianity, just over 70%. Unaffiliated, that's including atheists and agnostics, is around 22%. Judaism, around 2%. Islam, about 1%. Buddhism, just a barely over 0.5%. And Hinduism, just barely over 0.5%. Now, the point of sharing those stats is to help us recognize that while there are a very diverse amount of religions in America, even with multiple reports in the recent years showing the decline of Christianity in America, it still remains true that the religion with the strongest amount of influence in America is Christianity. We only need to look at the draconian anti-abortion law that was just passed in North Carolina, a law touted as a Christian victory. We only have to look at that law to see how influential certain versions of Christianity actually are. Now, when you listen to some Christians, particularly the more traditional and conservative groups, you might be led to believe that Christians are becoming increasingly marginalized in the U.S. Now, the reality is, of course, that what's really happening is that their more conservative and controlling religious take on laws are meeting more and more resistance from the public. For instance, 74% of North Carolinians support access to abortion. So not surprisingly, their ban has met up against a public outburst against the law that they're trying to pass. So, it's not that they are being marginalized as much as it is that they are losing influence, which is a big part of why they're rigging the system to maintain power. Now, I can see how losing influence might feel like being marginalized, but it simply isn't. And with as much as 70% of the people in the United States still identifying as Christian, for better or worse, it will likely be quite some time until those Christians can rightly even begin to make the claim that they are somehow being marginalized. The reality is that Christianity very heavily influences the laws and social standards of our nation. So much so that in spite of the original founders' intent to have separation of church and state, after all, it's a big part of what we were fleeing when we began our nation, in spite of their intent to have separation of church and state, since 1954, in our pledge, we have God, and a year later, we added it to our money. And make no mistake about it, many of the 70-ish percent of Americans who are Christian, many of them understand that that God of our pledging money is very clearly meant to be the Christian God, or as I once heard a similar person put here in the South very ignorantly, we are not one nation under Allah. So, as I was saying, for better or worse, Christianity very heavily influences the laws and social standards of our nation. For most of our history, it was moderate to fundamentalist Christians influencing these laws and social standards, but as I have already hinted at, that kind of Christianity is beginning to lose its influence even as they try to rig the system in their favor. Now, part of that is because of the decrease in overall Christianity in the U.S., and part of it is because an increase is happening in more progressive understandings of Christianity. And those Christians are more progressive understandings of Christianity, and that are those understandings are seen not only as a way to identify as Christian, but also seen that way by folks who identify as social but not spiritual, but not religious. The increasing number of people who have an understanding of teachings of Christianity that is different from the more moderate to fundamentalist understanding has created more than a bit of a divide in institutional religion, and by extension, by the current nature of the government in the U.S., a divide in politics as well. I actually addressed this divide in the institutional response, the church institutional response, in one of my question and answer responses to Bishop Spong's newsletter. The question that I was asked in that particular newsletter was, why is Christianity growing in its fundamentalist forms and dying where it tries to engage the thoughts of the present world? My response in part was this. I said, so the lazy answer here would be to say that fundamentalism is concrete and easy in comparison to the constant questioning and the embracing of mystery that comes along with progressive Christianity. And keep in mind, I said, that saying the answer is lazy is not saying it's incorrect, just a little bit incomplete. For me, a big part of this question, possibly the core of this question, boils down to the concept of religion versus spirituality. Most of the worship services that we do in church, even contemporary churches, is rooted in what I see as religion. It is somewhat dogmatic, tied to tradition, and hurls praises outwardly towards a divine being, typically a masculine divine being. Its value to its practitioners are its stability, how familiar it is, and ultimately in the assurance of God and God's mandate, which offers to all of those that gather there the comfort and security that they are fortunate to be amongst the subjects of and under the protection of God. Not infrequently, a religion that encourages its adherents to distance themselves from the world. That's what that type of belief system does. It encourages you to distance yourself from the world lest you become, well, less special. Not surprising, those types of churches are growing even at a slower rate than they used to. I mean, who wouldn't want to find some appreciation for being singled out by God as a special chosen people? As I see it, the places where Christian churches are on the decline are the very places where emphasis have started moving from the dogmatic religion to a more open and questioning spirituality. Typically, this approach to spirituality has one of its core elements as the connectedness of all of creation. It suggests a certain equality where no one is more chosen than another. That theological perspective encourages us to engage with the world in an active and intimate way, frequently to the extent of personal sacrifice. Now, not surprisingly, that has less appeal to many people than a religion that elevates them to a place of specialness. So I'll end that quote there. And while I, not so surprisingly, think the answer is a very solid response, imagine that, I think no one answers a solid answer. I think it is a solid response, and I do believe it's grounded in current realities, only a few days after writing it, I became even more interested in its political implication. That's right, its political implication. You see, buried in that response is the implication that the two groups that I described in terms of church attendance have two very different understandings of the God that they worship. And that combined with my point that Christianity heavily influences the laws and social standards of our land sets up what could and most probably would lead to a fairly schizophrenic nation. I, in fact, think that it probably will. And I'm not the only one that believes that. Let's first look at these two gods that I'm talking about that I believe my answer points us towards. On the one hand, is the more moderate to fundamentalist God. It's a very top-down, dogmatic, masculine-dominated image of God. Basically, in this way of understanding God, God is the strict father. The idea is that the father not only knows what's best, but is responsible for doling out the punishment to the kids when they step out of line. Now, the other perspective of God is more nurturing. One who our Jewish religious ancestors believe we are all made in the image of. One who wants to see us all live into our fullest potential and wants to ensure the basic necessities for everyone. So you're probably beginning to see the political implications that I'm pointing to from these two gods. UC Berkeley professor of linguistics and cognitive science, his name is George Lakoff, calls these two understandings of the parental role of God as the strict father and the nurturing parent. Strict father, nurturing parent. He's done what I consider to be some of the most fascinating work on what's behind the U.S. political divide. And one of the key factors are these two different perspectives for models of God. With our concepts of religion and nation both being built around, at least in part, the family, the idea and framework of family. And honestly, think about it. Both church and nation are built around sort of this framework of family. Think of God the Father, child of God, homeland security, founding fathers. We structure and framework both of them around these concepts of family. With both of our concepts of religion and nation being built in part around the framework of family, I think that this understanding of a strict father and a nurturing parent become very enlightening as we look at our political world. He says in his studies, the progressive worldview is modeled on a nurturing family. And briefly, it assumes that the world is basically good, it can be made better, and that we must work towards that. That children are born good, and parents can make them even better. Nurturing involves empathy and responsibility to take care of oneself and others for whom we are responsible. On a larger scale, he says, certain policies were followed, such as governmental protection in the form of social safety nets and government regulation. A universal education in order to ensure competence, civil liberties and equal treatment to ensure fairness and freedom, public service from an understanding of personal responsibility, an open government from a desire for an open communication, and the promotion of an economy that benefits all people and functions to promote those values which are traditional progressive values in American politics. He then goes on to say the conservative worldview, the strict father model of God, assumes that the world is dangerous and difficult, and that children are born bad and must be made good. The strict father is the moral authority who supports and defends the family, tells his wife what to do, teaches his kids right from wrong. The only way to do that is through painful discipline and that way of seeing things. Physical punishment that by adulthood will ultimately become an internal discipline. The good people are the disciplined people in this way of seeing things. The good people are the disciplined people. Once grown, the self-reliant, disciplined children are on their own, though. Those children who remain dependent, who are in this way of saying things, who are spoiled or overly willful or recalcitrant, should be forced to undergo further discipleship, or further discipline. Whoa, there's a slip. undergo further discipline, or if not, be cut free with no support to face the discipline of the outside world. So, project that onto the nation, and you see that to those on the far right, the good citizens are the disciplined ones, those who have already become wealthy or at least self-reliant, and those who are at least on their way to that. And meanwhile, social programs that basically spoil people by giving them things that they haven't earned and keep them dependent. The government is there only to protect the nation in this way of seeing things, maintain order, administer justice, here that is punishment, and to provide for the promotion and orderly conduct of business. In this way, disciplined people become self-reliant in terms of that way of thinking. Wealth, then, is a measurement of discipline. Which means taxes beyond the minimum amount needed for such a government to take over, they take away from the good disciplined people rewards that they have earned and instead spend it on those who have not earned. If you think about it, you can see it reflected in our government over and over again. And I'm not saying that I like his breakdown, but it does make a lot of sense. Explains a bit about how conservatives justify draconian laws like the anti-abortion bill that was just passed in North Carolina. I believe that it also points to Christianity's accountability in framing those perspectives. So, like it or not, Christianity plays a major role in how these kinds of laws come about. And I, for one, believe that puts a great onus of responsibility on those of us who see how unkind, uncaring, and unloving they are to do everything. That those of us who see that need to do everything we can do to change those laws. After all, isn't that exactly what a people who believe in a more nurturing spirituality would do? How can we do anything?
Thank you.
gestures. What is the meaning of Christian in this American life? I'm feeling awfully foolish, spending my life on a message. I look around and I wonder, ever if I heard it right? Coming to you, cause I'm confused. Coming to you, cause I feel used. Coming to weep while I'm waiting, telling you you made me go. I need to know there is justice, that it will roll in abundance, and that you're building a city where you arrive at when you prince, and you call us citizens, and you welcome us as children home. Alone and rejected, misunderstood and detested. You gave it all, didn't hold back. You even gave up your life. How can we call ourselves Christians, saying that love is a tension between the call of the cross and between the old party line? Coming to you for the mothers who are all running for cover. There's a flood from their weeping, telling me you won't make them go. I need to know there is justice that will roll in abundance, and that you're building a city where we arrive as immigrants, and you call us citizens, and you welcome us as children home. There is a man with a family. He has a wife and a baby. He broke the law just to save them, working for $3 an hour. Truly you said we were equal. Everyone's heart is deceitful. Everyone born is an evil. And love is the law of the land. Coming to you for the hungry, even the scraps of this country. And you swear you would them. Tell me you won't make them know. I need to know there is justice, that it will roll in abundance, and that you're building a city where we arrive as immigrants, and you call us citizens, and you welcome us as children home. There is a wolf who is ranting, all of the sheep, they are clapping, promising power and protection, claiming the Christ who was killed by a common consensus. Everyone screaming Barabbas, trading their God for a hero, forfeiting heaven for Rome. Coming to you cause I'm angry, coming to you cause I'm guilty, coming to you cause you promised to leave the block for the one. I need to know there is justice, that it will fall in abundance, and that you're building a city where we arrive as immigrants, and you call us citizens, and you welcome us as children home. We arrive as immigrants, and you call us citizens, and you welcome us as children home. Is there a way to love always, living in enemies hallways? Don't know my foes from my friends, and don't know my friends anymore. Power has several prizes. Handcuffs can come in all sizes. Love has a million disguises. But winning is simply not one.
It's been, I think, almost a month since I did self-promotion and did a prayer out of my book of progressive prayers. But I do want to share one of those prayers with you today. This one is on creating God in our image. Again, as I always say, this can be a prayer for you, it can be a meditation. Just be a moment to breathe in and out, to relax and grab the words that mean something to you in the moment. Let's bow our heads together. Throughout history, humanity has professed a love for this thing we call God. Only it would seem that we don't love the same God. The gods we love are the ones we each have created. We love discovering that our God is much like us. We love those moments when a piece of sacred text confirms the things we have long suspected and gives us divine permission to hold on to biases, judgment, and even damnation. May truth break into the realities we have created. May we learn to confirm within ourselves the thing that our spirits already know, that any God is too big to be contained in some limited earthly conceptualization. May we be led to experience the breadth and the depth of love and creation in a way we have never felt secure in exploring before. May we be directed towards a faith that is not dependent upon certainty, a faith that is fascinated with the questions, a faith that gains energy and strength in an uncertainty that points to the reality of something bigger than we could ever fully understand. May we find humility in that knowledge. May it gut our overstated piousness to its core and create in us a God-shaped space that seeks out only the reality that is founded in, nurtured by, reliant upon, enlivened with love. Let us make love our default position. And in that God-shaped space, may we find an unending desire to envelop the world and all the people in it with a grace and love that it has never known before. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those you meet.
I need to know there is justice that will come in the sea, and there will be a city where there are right and a prince, and you call us sisters.